Wake up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, filling in for Tony D. Here's Mike Gill.
On a good Tuesday morning, everybody, wherever you may be. Mike Gill filling in for Tony D. Ron Culver, what is going on a Tuesday edition? The NBA awards last night. We had yesterday we had talked about a computer battle in baseball, which turned out to be pretty entertaining. We had fireworks before said Phillies Mets game last night. We'll dive into that in about 34 minutes from now with Frank Close, who covers the Phillies. You know, the Phillies came out yesterday and basically had to defuse all of the sports talk radio fodder, and we'll talk to Frank Close about what was said in Philly regarding the manager. Mickey Callaway had to come out yesterday, and I don't know that he really gave a great apology, but he certainly met the media after attempting to fight them the day before. So we've got that going for you. We've also going to get into this U.S. women's soccer win yesterday, which was a little controversial with that second goal as USA beats Spain 2-1 at the World Cup. And then the men who were able to get a win in the Gold Cup, which is kind of an interesting topic. They beat Trinidad and Tobago 6-0. And you remember like 2017 when Trinidad and Tobago beat the United States men's team to basically cause one of the more embarrassing losses for USA soccer. I don't know if beating Trinidad and Tobago 6-0 at the Gold Cup really washes that away. But Tony Meola, the great goaltender, will join us at 7:40 this morning. And we will get into NBA free agency. Mitch Lawrence, longtime NBA columnist from Sporting News and Forbes, he's going to join us to kind of put his spin on what NBA free agency will look like. But I want to get into the NFL. All this week, we're going to kind of try to dive into quarterbacks. And when we come back, it's QBs in the NFC East. Later on in the show, QBs in the AFC East. Kind of two-a-days at QBs. But I think the NFC East has some very intriguing quarterback questions and battles, and we're going to dive into them. Coming up next.
This is SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Filling in for Tony D, here's Mike Gill.
All right, Ron Culver, Mike Gill, in for Tony D. SB Nation AM. So, the quarterbacks position rules the world, right? You can make an argument. Each sport has their argument. You know, hockey has the goaltender. Baseball has the dominating pitcher. I'm not really sure what basketball would say, like maybe just like this unique score, because it seems that in the NBA, by the way, Giannis Antetokounmpo, MVP. Rockets respectfully disagree. They put out a tweet last night. Congratulations, MVP. We respectfully disagree. And then map out James Harden's resume. But it wasn't very close, right? It was like 70-plus votes for Antetokounmpo, 20-some votes for Harden last night. And, you know, Antetokounmpo is kind of interesting. We'll get into this MVP and the NBA stuff a little bit later on. But quarterbacks rule the NFL, man. I mean, in all of sports, as I just mentioned, it's probably one of the most important positions in all of sports. And each day this week, for the rest of the week, we're going to kind of look at quarterbacks in each of the divisions. We'll do it two a day. QBs in the NFC East. And I want to look at, you know, if you were just to rank these guys, I think, well, it's interesting because there's a little bit of like a murmur that some people think Dak Prescott is either A, better or on the same level as Carson Wentz, which is somewhat laughable, but we'll play along with it for now. I think Wentz is with the injuries. There's the big question there. Prescott, obviously, when he didn't have Zeke Elliott, struggled a bit, but he's got Zeke and he's got Cooper, who came out yesterday and said he wants to go for 2,000 yards, which would be fun to watch, right? Watching Dak Prescott chucking around the field to Amari Cooper to the tune of 2,000. I'm sure Zeke Elliott would love that. And then you've got Eli Manning, a two-time Super Bowl champion, who, let's just be kind and say, is on the downslide of his career. And then what's going on in Washington? I mean, Dwayne Haskins has been drafted. You've got Case Keenum, who's kind of become this vagabond mercenary, if you will, bouncing all over the league. Took Minnesota to the NFC Championship game a couple of years ago. Went down to Denver. And now Washington's going to take their crack. I would assume, and you got Colt McCoy in that mix, too, down there. Washington just seems like a total disaster at this point. They're going to run it back with Adrian Peterson, which I don't have a huge problem with, but they don't have a lot of weapons. But the Carson Wentz-Dak Prescott conversation at the top of the card seems to be the most entertaining one of them all. You know, a couple of weeks ago, there were people writing about how these two that Dak deserves. You know, Wentz just got paid a big-time contract. But the contract was really kind of, quote-unquote, team-friendly. You know, Howie Roseman never loses a deal. And it was one of those deals where, at the end of the day, the Philadelphia Eagles ended up kind of, like, making out in the deal. You know, they got their cap in order, the way they kind of set it up. But then these whispers started to come out of Dallas. It's like, hey, well, Wentz got paid. Dak deserves more, and it's almost baffling. I love the enthusiasm from the Dallas Cowboy fan out there. Like, look, I'm not knocking Dak Prescott. There was a show that I did a couple of years back. He had a game on like a Sunday night or Monday night game. I think it was against Arizona, and he just came to play and looked awesome. And then I really came on the next day and was like, man, that guy just jumped into another category. But that category wasn't an MVP category. And that's where Carson Wentz is. Carson Wentz was going to be, everybody, he was going to win the MVP award. You know how hard that is in the NFL? It's not easy to be the NFL MVP with Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, guys who have established themselves, won Super Bowls. You don't just have some fly-by-night kid walk into the league and win MVP. It just doesn't happen. How many times has some random dude just came in and had that year, won the MVP, and then disappeared? Can you name a guy? Because I can't. Where is that player? The guy who just had that year. I mean, this isn't baseball where some dude jacked himself up with steroids, hit 70 bombs, and then won the MVP, and then disintegrated. The NFL, you've got to have track record. You've got to have some sort of staying power. And Carson Wentz was going to win the MVP, right? Can we all agree on that? He was going to win the MVP. And with no disrespect to Dak Prescott, because I think he's pretty good, Dak Prescott ain't winning an MVP ever. He's not going to be in the conversation. He's not going to be on the ballot. He's not going to be close. So to put those two guys in the same sentence is laughable. It's absolutely laughable. Now, I get it. Wentz came back last year, and he wasn't the same player as the guy who was in the MVP conversation or who was going to win the MVP. But he still had 21 touchdowns and 7 interceptions, which, by the way, I bet you wherever you're listening today, you wish your quarterback had a bad year when he throws 21 touchdowns and 7 interceptions, right? There's a lot of bad, mediocre quarterbacks out there. And the problem was Carson Wentz was going to win the MVP, and then he took a step back because of that injury. Tom Brady constantly is in the MVP race. His worst year ever came, ironically, the year after he tore his ACL. Yeah, that's right. You remember, he tore his ACL. Matt Cassel came in, won 10 games, almost took him to the playoffs. The only time in my lifetime, I think, that the Patriots haven't made the playoffs, at least in the last 20 years. And then the next year, Tom Brady went right back to being Tom Brady. So moral of the story, when we're looking at quarterbacks in the NFC East right now, it's Carson Wentz at the top, and there's a huge gap between number two. The conversation of having Dak Prescott in the conversation with Wentz is not happening on this program. Not happening. Dak's right there, number two. I like Dak. He's a winner. I love his attitude. I think he certainly is going to be able to take a step up this year. You've got Zeke Elliott, one of the top three, four backs in the league. So you can hand the ball off and really take a lot of pressure off yourself. And then the way they incorporated Amari Cooper. I mean, Cooper came in last year, 725 yards. He was on pace, if he played a full season in Dallas, for like 1,300 yards. So he's got the weaponry there. I'm very interested to see how Witten incorporates himself back in. And I wonder if he's going to have hair when he plays, actually, this year. That'll be interesting to watch as well. Storyline, Dallas. Does Jason Witten have hair under his helmet this year? But Dak Prescott, I'll put him at number two. I don't have a problem with that. 13-3, 9-7, 10-6. Guys won games, man. Give credit to guys who win games. People act like, hey, the quarterback doesn't have wins and losses. Yeah, it's not a baseball pitcher, but you know what? When you're on the field, at the end of the day, when Sports Talk Radio takes their phone calls, no one says, man, the left guard, he really stunk today. The quarterback stunk. And when the team wins, man, that Dak Prescott, he had a great game today. It's not, hey, that right guard, he really earned his money today. No, quarterback wins games. Quarterback takes most heat. Quarterback, most important, all the time. Eli Manning, that story is going to be interesting. I'm telling you, wherever you are listening right now, pay attention to the Jones-Manning matchup in training camp. Because inevitably, you're going to hear the rumbles that Jones looks better than Manning. He has to. My arm's stronger than Manning's right now. And that's not to take anything away from the accomplishments of Manning. But look, there's a reason Odell Beckham prefers Cleveland right now to New York. Have you ever heard anyone aside from LeBron James say, you know what, I'd really like to spend my time in Cleveland over New York? And I've never been to Cleveland, so I'm not knocking Cleveland. I knew guys in college who were from Cleveland. They were great dudes, always spoke well of it. But when you were comparing the two cities growing up, I just never heard anybody say, man, I really prefer to visit Cleveland over New York, except for Odell Beckham. I mean, he basically came out this week and said, hey, I was being held back in New York. It was without saying, hey, because the quarterback couldn't reach me. But yeah, mentally and this and that, I just couldn't get to where I needed to be. And then finally in Washington, you're going to have this battle that Haskins, I think, should win, but maybe they give it to Keenum to start. But keep an eye on what happens down there, because they got Haskins, they like him a lot, but that team's going nowhere fast. So do you have that decision to make where you start the rookie right from scratch, or do you go to the veteran, wait until people boo? Much like that happened in Philadelphia when Doug Peterson was the quarterback and Donovan McNabb was sitting on the bench. And, you know, eight games in, Andy Reid finally turned things over to McNabb, and then the rest is history, kind of. They never won anything Super Bowl-wise, but had a pretty good run there for a while. Maybe that's how the Washington Redskins handle things. All right, we'll look at quarterbacks in the AFC East coming up at 8:12 today. That division, you talk about quarterbacks, the AFC East, that's going to be a dumpster fire conversation, and you're going to be there with me for it. Hey, coming up, this is going to be interesting. So you remember yesterday we were talking about Mickey Callaway against Gabe Kapler? Well, they went mano a mano last night in the Phillies-Mets game. But there's something that came out in that game beforehand or afterwards, both before and after, I should say, that really sticks out to me. And we're going to dive into that coming up. Mike Gill in for Tony D. This is SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, filling in for Tony D, here's Mike Gill.
Yeah, so Ron Culver, I got to ask you this question, all right? This story is bonkers. The Mets are in town. I mean, this is a good week for me to be filling in for Tony D. You know, I'm in Philly, and the Mets and the Phillies are just dumpster fires right now, and the two of them went at it last night. And both managers are getting all sorts of heat. Now, we'll have more on the Phillies managerial situation, which it got so bad, Ron, that Matt Klentak, the GM, had to come out and speak before the game yesterday to about 50 assembled media members because people were going to the game, media members, with the thought that something could happen. So Klentak had to come out and get ahead of it and basically had to make an announcement about his manager. So we'll have Frank Close, who covers the Phillies for 97.3ESPN.com, coming up in about 12 minutes. Yeah, go ahead.
Now, when you say something might happen, are you saying people are hoping for firing?
Well, hoping, I think. We had a poll question up on our show locally here, and almost 50% when we asked them, like, you know, they got swept by the Marlins, they've lost seven straight. What should be next? Was it make a trade, fire Klentak, fire Kapler, or it's just a June swoon? Over 45% had fire Kapler. He's not the most popular guy in town. Let's just say that. Now, we had a guest scheduled on my local show yesterday for 4:30. He told my producer ahead of time, hey, look, I can lock into 4:30, but there's a good chance something might happen. And sure enough, he had a bounce to 5:30. So there was already getting to the ballpark a feeling of something. But I don't know that it rivals what happens with the Mets. Have you heard? Now, I have hinted at this, and I might have hinted at it yesterday on SB Nation AM, which is, these managers aren't managing anymore, right? We've had numerous guests on that I've talked to that cover baseball and are like, look, the managers are getting all this heat from the fans, but they're not managing the games. These are the GMs basically saying to Mickey Callaway, Gabe Kapler, insert manager that you don't like here, and saying, you should play this guy at third base. Not you should play. You're going to play this guy at third base tonight because the numbers say he's the guy to play tonight. Or you're going to pitch this guy for X amount of innings. And apparently this story has come out from the New York Post that the GM of the Mets, Brody Van Wagenen, is that how you say his name, Van Wagenen? I don't know. The new GM out there.
Something like that.
He continues to insist that his manager listens to him. Like, he's texting in during the games, like, hey, get DeGrom out of the game. Hey, do this. The source said that he is watching the game at home on TV. He will communicate to a member of the Mets support staff and demand that Callaway pulls DeGrom from the game. And Callaway complied with the order. Now, DeGrom was upset as he left the field, according to the report. But this is what baseball's coming to, man. I mean, hey, here's a text message that says you got to take DeGrom out of the game right now. So these fans that call into shows and say, the manager doesn't have that baseball guy. He doesn't have that gut feeling. No, because the computer said get him out of the game. Can you believe this story?
I'm just thinking back to, like, past managers, you know, from the era when you and I grew up, like a Tony La Russa or, you know, why am I blanking on Joe Torre?
Yeah.
Would they ever stand for a GM stepping in and going, hey, you need to pull this guy. Hey, you should play this guy at second. You should play this guy in the outfield tonight because his percentages are better against left-handed pitchers than the guy you want to play.
Yeah.
If that happened to Tony La Russa, he would just up and fire or up and quit.
I can't even imagine. You're right. Like, guys like La Russa, Joe Torre, even Joe Girardi, you know, there's a lot of reports in New York as to, look, the Yankees were a good team when he left, and they were on the rise, and he just decided, I don't want to be this type of manager anymore where Cashman is basically telling me what to do the whole time. And I'm sure it goes on all across the country in every baseball city. A lot of these teams are using the analytics and the numbers so much that the managers who are getting criticized after the game, they're the ones taking the bullets, but they're not the ones making the moves.
Yeah, we celebrate Moneyball, but really Moneyball might be the detriment to baseball.
Well, it's interesting that because I was somebody brought that up to me yesterday and said, this is really Moneyball. And I said, well, this isn't like what's going on is kind of like a different like Moneyball was really the assembly of a team based on like on base percentage. And yeah, but, you know, I see what you're like.
But it's these GMs are now taking it a step further. It's not only assembly. They're playing video game baseball.
Yes. Yeah. That's where I was going is that these guys are taking the team that they have assembled, whether it be power, whatever. And they're basically just going strictly off of, all right, who's pitching tonight? All right, these nine guys have the best average against that pitcher. Let's go with them. And it's unbelievable, like, to say, hey, this guy's at certain pitches. When he goes over that pitch count, his numbers go to this. We got to get him out of the game. That's no way to manage a baseball game, man. I mean, seriously, like, I get it. The numbers, they don't lie, they say. But sometimes you just got to go with your gut feeling and – look, every day is different. Every day of the week, you don't know what's going on in someone's life. They wake up, their wife's mad at them, their kid's sick, you know, he was late for school, yada, yada. Maybe you have a bad day that day that implements those numbers saying what they are. When the game is going on and you have a feel of how that guy's going, you don't just say, hey, the numbers suggest I got to get this guy out of the game. You got to go off of more than just that. There's intuition in this that is... That's what makes, Ron, that's what makes somebody a special manager is that they have that intuition, right?
Yeah, you just go with the hot hand or if you, you know, you get that feeling. I mean, what was it, I know it's a satire movie, Major League, when Lou is sitting there and I think he's saying he's going with Vaughn.
Yes.
Against the, you know, the top hitter. He goes, oh, I have a feeling.
Give me Vaughn.
I have a feeling he's due. But that's what you want. You want a manager to just, you know, risk it all right then and there.
Yeah, instead, now you've got the end result, Ron, is Mickey Callaway's going all George Costanza bodysuit, man, trying to get himself fired. Steinbrenner's an idiot! Steinbrenner's an idiot! Driving around with the World Series championship, you know, attached to the back bumper of his car, trying to get fired so he can leave the Yankees to go to the Mets. That's Callaway right now. He's yelling at reporters trying to get himself fired, all because the GM is managing the team. And, you know, there's Phillies fans that call into our show all the time. They can't stand Kapler because he goes by the computer. You know, last year there was that report that Nick Williams, he was, you know, hitting pretty well. He was got off to a good start, and they had asked him, well, why aren't you in the lineup today? You remember his response? You remember the story when he said, well, the computer didn't put me in the lineup today. Yeah, I mean, early in the season, Kapler was getting heat literally from day one because of some of these analytical moves. And one of the players came out and said, yeah, the computer didn't put me in the lineup today. So, like, it's hard to imagine. Kapler's getting a lot of heat here because he didn't bench Segura, who didn't run out two balls. Okay, he didn't run out the one ball in a game. It was a pop-up to second base, and he kind of fell out of the batter's box, and he ended up running. Well, it ended up getting McCutchen into a rundown, and then McCutchen got hurt on the play, and he's out for the year. Well, then next time up, in a different game, he hits a single to center field. He doesn't run out of the box, and the ball gets by the left fielder to the point where it gets into the gap. Well, he ended up not getting to second base because he never ran out of the box. He hasn't been benched, okay? So the other day, Cesar Hernandez doesn't hustle a ball out. Well, how do you bench Cesar Hernandez after you didn't bench Segura? Because Hernandez is saying, well, he didn't bench that guy. Why? So it's hard to imagine that these players have optimal, it's a word that Kapler likes to use, respect for the manager when maybe they don't think he's the one making the decisions. You know what I mean? Like, it's a little bizarre of a situation here.
No, it's extreme. I don't know. Like I said, I would just love to see some of these older managers.
Yes. You know, give me back, Earl Weaver in a game.
Go back. Oh, my God. Connie Mack.
Yes. Earl Weaver kicking dirt.
Casey Stengel would love this new era of baseball.
Well, when we come back, what is the future of Gabe Kapler? The GM had to come out yesterday before the game, and we'll have details on it coming up with Phillies reporter Frank Close of 97.3 ESPN.com.
This is SB Nation AM. on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, filling in for Tony D, here's Mike Gill.
The Phillies snap a seven-game losing skid with a 13-7 win over the Mets. It was like old times at Citizens Bank Park. A new lineup. They went kind of back to opening day, kind of. But it was something that happened before the game that we want to dive into first with Frank Close, who covers the Phillies for 97.3 ESPN.com. And, Frank, you know, yesterday, the Phillies knew that there was a storm brewing. I mean, they had to have felt what was happening here, and they got out in front of the storm, and a surprising decision by Matt Klentak to basically come out and defuse everything. The manager is not getting fired. The coaches are not getting fired. Nobody is getting fired. And he added to that. He said, the 25 guys here, if they play well, we'll make the playoffs. If they don't play well, we're not going to make the playoffs. So first, let's get into the manager stuff. Were you surprised that it got to the point yesterday where the GM had to come out and make that declaration on June 24th?
Not really surprised that he would do such a thing. You know, the team that was coming in to play them this week is the New York Mets, and they had their own struggles, and they responded by firing pitching coach Dave Island and bullpen coach Chuck Hernandez. So, you know, you don't like that instability, and if the players sense that something could change, that kind of rattles them as well. So it's just a quick reminder that yeah, this is how it is, and you can either step up and win, or you can just let yourself lose. And it seemed like the players actually responded to that.
Do you think, like, that the team, I mean, after they lose seven straight, that's one thing, but getting swept at home by the Marlins, do you feel the team was feeling that the fans were starting to push for something drastic to happen, meaning maybe a hitting coach or a pitching coach or even the manager get fired? Like, did it feel over the weekend that after that loss and getting swept by the Marlins that it felt like, hey, Monday something might happen?
You know, I think that more than anything, the players were probably embarrassed. You know, this was a team with high expectations. This is a team with a lot of talent, and they really bottomed out. You know, there were articles the week before, even before they faced the Marlins over the weekend, that they had hit a new low. And then they let the worst team in the National League, arguably, come into town and sweep you. That's really taking it on the chin there. So I think that they might have just been plain embarrassed at how things had turned out over the weekend. And regardless of what fans say, you know, a lot of the players really could care less what fans are saying on Twitter. They hear the boos, granted, and they certainly heard the boos over the weekend after what seemed like it was a very punchless weekend where they couldn't get a clutch hit at any time. And so they knew the fans didn't like it, but I think more than anything, they just plain felt embarrassed, because I think that the players felt that they were better than that seven-game losing streak.
Frank Close, 97.3 ESPN.com. Phillies win after a seven-game losing streak, but really the story's beforehand. So Gabe Kapler, he's going to make it through. I guess this means Matt Klentak's safe too, right? I mean, if he's the one that comes out and says no one's getting fired, he has to feel pretty secure that he's not going anywhere either.
Yeah, I would say so. And Klentak is not without blame for the Phillies' recent stretch. Now, last season, the Phillies fell apart down the stretch, and the main reason for that was their starting pitching. And essentially, Matt Klentak went into 2019 with the same five guys in the starting rotation that he had last year, maybe with the caveat that Jared Eichhoff might be healthy and might be able to pitch to the level he did way back in 2016. So he was really kind of rolling the dice with the starting rotation. And even today, the Phillies don't really know who their fifth starter is. Vince Velasquez had lost the job in the starting rotation, and yet, what do you know, he's the one that's going to be pitching on the fifth day, at least for now, so it seems, maybe kind of sort of after being declared as the back end of the bullpen guy that's going to help pick up the loss of the likes of Tommy Hunter and Pat Neshek, who came back and immediately went on the disabled list 2 outs later. So there was a lot of instability there that was created by Klentak, and you know, the Phillies are often they talk about their bullpen and are criticized for their bullpen, which had as many as 7 players on the disabled list. And you know that's really made a heck of a lot worse when you have a starting rotation that is not stable, that has guys like Vince Velasquez who only average a little bit over 5 innings a start. Put so much more pressure on the bullpen, and really a lot of that is Matt Klentak failing to address the need that was very, very clear at the end of last season, and even the Phillies president, Andy McPhail, spoke about during the offseason that they needed to get more left-handed, and the Phillies starting rotation still does not have a left-handed starter. I would expect that to change. I expect Matt Klentak to be active at the trade deadline, even though he says the 25 guys that they have should be good enough, but I think he just needed to put it back on the players and say, are you going to step up or not?
Yeah, Frank, you mentioned trades. They made the one trade for Jay Bruce. They lost McCutchen, and it seemingly now is that McCutchen was the heartbeat of that team that they are clearly missing. However, if Matt Klentak and this Phillies team, you know, they are just 2 games over 500, but right in the thick of the wild card race. The National League has been pretty bad. Do they have depth in the organization, and do they have any chess pieces to move to make this team better?
I think they do. I think they can spare one of their former first-round pick outfielders. Adam Haseley got a call-up recently, and then unfortunately went on the disabled list for them almost immediately. He's a first-round pick from a few years ago out of Virginia. He's on the comeback trail. He could rejoin the Phillies soon. He made his first rehab start last night for AA Reading. So you could see him back in action soon, but he could be a trade piece, as could Mickey Moniak, who was the first overall pick the year before Haseley. So they probably can spare one of those outfielders, because you know that for the next couple of years they're kind of locked in with McCutchen when he gets healthier and Bryce Harper. So they can spare an outfielder. They have a few pitching prospects in the organization that they could spare too. Adonis Medina is their top pitching prospect. They could trade him. They might not trade him. I think they would prefer to hold on to him. And so they still have some prospects. You know, they aren't the type of prospects that you heard a lot about as the Phillies were rebuilding, because you know back when they were rebuilding, you had really had to hang your hat very closely on those types of players. But now that you have the Bryce Harpers in the organization, you're not necessarily hearing about names like Spencer Howard, who remain a top prospect for the Phillies on the mound. And some of the guys that are under the radar are certainly being scouted by other teams, and they could be involved in a trade. So they have some pieces. Phillies still have some financial wherewithal to maybe take on some contracts for later. You know, you could get a little creative with the trades. The Phillies have some high-dollar bullpen pieces with average annual value that they could get another team to take back if they're going to take back some money. So I think Klentak is creative enough that he'll be able to do something. And if you look at the Phillies prospect list, a lot of those players have kind of been in and out of the major leagues already, but they still have a few pieces that I think that they could add an impact arm if they needed to. Maybe somebody like Matt Boyd of the Detroit Tigers.
Phillies 5.5 back of the Braves in National League East, and really the National League has been a mess. It's the Dodgers and then everybody else when you look at the NL. Matt, Frank, you look at, you mentioned Matt Boyd as a trade piece. It looks like everybody's going to be going after Madison Baumgartner. Mike Minor's a name that has come up. And that trade deadline, July 31st, is going to be interesting because there is no secondary trade, the post-waiver deadline. A lot of teams are still in the mix here. So we'll see if the Phillies can get a move between now. Look, a lot can change between now and July 31st. We're still over a month to that deadline. So we'll see. I want to get your take on this story about the Mets and the GM who was basically managing games from home, sending text messages in. There's been a lot of baseball people, Frank, who have insinuated that a lot of teams do this. Like, don't be mad at Gabe Kapler. Don't be mad at Mickey Callaway. Don't be mad at Brian Snitker. Don't be mad at these guys when they make mistakes sometimes, because they're just doing what the front office is telling them. Do you feel that kind of is integrated itself into baseball?
Oh, it definitely has. And, you know, one thing last year, you know, you look at one of the guys that the Mets signed this offseason, that's catcher Wilson Ramos. One thing I picked up on last year with the Phillies was that he did not want to wear one of these armbands that the catchers were often requested to wear, which had a lot of data and a lot of, some of their chess moves on it that the team wanted the players to employ, and Will Ramos did not want to wear that armband. And I think that may be a reason why the Phillies decided to not pursue re-signing him and instead went after JT Realmuto, who, of course, may be even better than that. But you know, it's something that's been happening for a long time. I even remember, I'd say even 20 years ago, teams calling pitches from the dugout, and certainly that's kind of trickled to the up to the general manager even a little bit more than that. The reports are often disputed by Brody Van Wagenen of the Mets, and you know, there's this piece in the New York Post which talks about how that he was watching a game at home on TV and actually called a member of the Mets support staff to get Jacob DeGrom out of the game when he was he seemed visibly shaken, and that's a little strange. I think, you know, that's something that that the coaching staff should be able to manage. You know, I'm a firm believer in letting people do their jobs, whether that's the catcher call the game or that's the manager manage the game. I think that's in general way, whether you're in the business world or or playing baseball. You know, you got to let people do their jobs. Nobody likes anybody breathing down your neck, and if that's happening, you know, I can see why any organization would struggle, especially the New York Mets, and certainly we saw that blow up. I believe Eitan overnight, had the reporter who took the brunt of the frustration of Mets manager Mickey Callaway and pitcher Jason Vargas.
Yeah,
because it just seems like you know that this is all trickling down from the top, perhaps, Tim, who's just doing his job and asking questions that any reporter would ask. All of a sudden,
it seemed very innocent. It seemed like a very innocent, like, back and forth between the reporter and then the manager. It was almost like premeditated. I've had it with the way this is. This isn't the way I envisioned this job being. You know what I mean? And it just kind of spilled over, and boom, he let the guy have it. And then apparently yesterday before the game, he had some kind of half contrived apology.
Yeah, I think sometimes, we see with managers all the time. So if your team's struggling, you want to light a fire under them so you get yourself tossed from the game, right? So, you're trying to show some sort of emotion. Unfortunately, with Tim Britton, it didn't seem like that was a smart way to do it. In the end, I think the Mets just ended up looking rather foolish out of the whole situation.
Frank Close, follow him on Twitter at Frank Close with a K, and he covers the Phillies for 97.3 ESPN.com. Phillies and Mets continue it at Citizens Bank Park. It's a series that a lot of people around the country have an eye on for, waiting for some sort of something to combust and possibly happen, but it seems like the Phillies jumped out ahead of it and said no move will be made with the manager. Frank, thank you, pal. Thanks for waking up early.
Thanks, Mike.
That is Frank Close, SB Nation AM. Mike Gill, Ron Culver in for Tony D on this Tuesday. And, boy, last night, I've been watching, I love pitching matchups. I love the pitcher's duel, if you will. And last night we had a pitching duel that would have been really good like 3 or 4 years ago. Not that these guys are no good now, but Zach Greinke went up against Clayton Kershaw. And I'll tell you what happened in that game that may surprise everybody out there. I'll tell you what happened in that game coming up next. It's SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, filling in for Tony D, here's Mike Gill.
Clayton Kershaw against Zach Greinke. I mean, these are Cy Young Award winners, right?
Former teammates.
That too. Greinke has been all over the place. Kershaw is stuck in L.A., but yes, they were former teammates, Ron. And when those two guys would pitch in a pitching matchup together, you would anticipate a pitcher's duel, right? I mean, isn't that what you would figure?
Low scoring, 0-0 going into the seventh inning.
Yeah, well, I've got Kershaw on my fantasy team, and it's not working out so great anymore. Like, when he pitches in the past, it was dominant, lockdown. You knew you were getting something special. No longer. In fact, last night, I'm locking in for a little Greinke versus Kershaw, thinking I'm going to see this great pitching duel. Instead, I get Greinke stepping up to the plate last night and belching a bomb as the Diamondbacks snap a losing streak to beat Kershaw and the Dodgers. Did you see this home run? I mean, this guy, the exit velocity on this thing must have been an all-time record. Greinke absolutely tattooed a Kershaw pitch last night.
Just helping out his own cause. That's what you want out of a pitcher, right?
Oh, yeah. I am firmly a National League guy. I hate the DH.
Yeah.
So Greinke hitting the bomb last night was great. By the way, did you see these guys' lines? Kershaw, Greinke, both of them. 6 innings, 7 hits, 4 runs, 4 earned, both had a walk. Now, Greinke had 6 strikeouts, Kershaw had 2, but their lines were almost identical. Kershaw this year, 3.07 ERA. Greinke, 3.08. They're the same guy. It's like that Spider-Man pointing back and forth at each other right there, except for Greinke took Kershaw deep. And the D-backs beat the Dodgers 8-5. I'm Mike Gill with Ron Kohler in for Tony D. This is SB Nation AM.